Thank you for welcoming me, and thank you to everybody for joining us today. Such a lovely song. I'm so happy to see you all. Thank you for coming again. It's very sweet. Like Tolan said, I am calling in from Arcata, which is about 300 miles north of San Francisco on the coast in the Redwoods, where it's very foggy today, and it is the unceded land of the Wiat. And I'm very happy to be here. Our morning will begin with a short arriving meditation. We'll talk with each other a little bit. I'll offer a few Dharma thoughts before our longer meditation, and then we'll have our longer meditation, a break, a Dharma talk, plenty of time for group discussion, which I always think is such a rich part of what we do together, is really having these conversations about the Dharma and what you're thinking about. So just knowing that I really welcome and appreciate everybody's participation. And so thank you very much for coming. And if you'd like, if you feel like it, if you'd like to chat in where you are coming from today, that would be great. So we have a sense of where everybody is. La Mesa, Victoria, hi. Memphis. Everybody can read it. Audrey, thank you for coming from France. It's such a pleasure. Ron's back from Chicago. Anna's here from Berlin. Coast Miwok land. Isn't this great? Isn't this just wonderful to see, to read our community and where everybody's coming from? Jackie, you're in Michigan. Thank you for coming. Here comes Tom. Anyway, so you can just read that. You can continue typing in if you feel like it, or we can stop it. This just gives us a sense of our sangha today. It's really very sweet. So as I'm just closing out my chat, as Tolan said, I don't really do well with trying to do too many things at once. And so if you have a question for me, just you can either chat it into Tolan or hold on to it or write it down. But please don't chat me, because I just turn the chat off, because I can't do it all at once. I'd much rather be fully present with you. So let's begin with arriving together. And we'll have this time to settle in. So please find a posture that works really well for you, one that you can sense arriving and settling, that you can relax into. Eyes open or closed, whichever you prefer. If your eyes are open, inviting a soft, gentle gaze downward, not really looking at anything, just downward. And if your eyes are closed, an inward gaze, turning the awareness inward, sensing down into the body, sensing how you're making contact, the body is making contact with whatever you're connected to. Sensing the presence of the body, the weight of the body pressing into the floor, the furniture, and how the spine grows tall out of the deep low back, all the way to the crown of the head. And as you exhale, softening the whole front of the body from the forehead down the face, through the throat, the chest and the belly. Even relaxing the arms and the hands. Making room to breathe. Getting a sense of how things are today internally. From the most comfortable to the least comfortable, everything in between. Noticing the heart, welcoming the heart, whatever the state of heart is, knowing it belongs. And likewise, the state of mind. All of this we welcome as we arrive and settle. Settling into that connection and belonging into practice. We all belong, every part of us belongs. We arrive. Inviting the breath to be a bridge that connects the actions of the mind, the motions of the heart, right into the body, sensing into this breath. And noticing if there's any discomfort present, sensations, thoughts, energies, and maybe reflecting if you like, when you experience discomfort, what is your most common response? And in no way is this question asking for analysis or judgment. This is an observation of habitual response. When you experience discomfort, what is your most common response to it? And just let that go. And as we move forward into our practice this morning, if there is any intention that arises, reminding yourself why you're here. What is it that keeps you coming back over and over again to these practices of clarifying the mind, stabilizing and balancing the mind, tending the heart? Just notice if an intention arises. Breathe it in, let it spread. Welcome back. So last week, we were talking about the five spiritual faculties of faith and energy, mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom. And at the end of class, we were having a really good discussion. And I'm not sure who said it, but it came up as a suggestion of, let's talk about discomfort. Let's talk about discomfort next week. So here we go. Here we go. I think that in many ways, that's the whole of this practice, is learning how to manage discomfort. And that's why I asked in the meditation, when you experience discomfort, do you have a common response? What are those habitual responses? And if you feel like raising your hand and sharing, that'd be great. Love to hear from you. Or if you'd just like to chat it in and see if there's something that comes out, just to get a sense of what that's like for you, if you feel like it. Wanting to fix, note it. Yeah. Avoidance. Thank you, Peg. Yes. It shouldn't be like this. I have to fix it. Scared. Yeah. Yeah. Great. Thank you. Thank you for doing that. My hunch is we could all relate to that very much. So I want to start with a poem, of course. Want to fight it. Jane, thank you. Yes. Here's a poem called Hello Fear from Rosemary Wattala Traumer. There I was, making tea in my kitchen when fear hit me like a school bus. I didn't need a scientist or a therapist to tell me it hurt. I screamed, ah! I shouted, no! But after smashing into me, fear just opened the folding glass door of the bus, yanked me on, then plopped me into a green vinyl seat. I'm scared, I said. Yeah, fear said, 'cause I'm scary. Yeah, I squealed as the bus careened through the couch, through my bedroom, through the splintering dining room table. What if I lose everything? I said to fear. Yeah, said fear, what if you do? And who will I be when everything changes? Yeah, said fear, who will you be? Then he opened the door and shoved me off the bus, and I was standing again beside the familiar green counter, teacup in hand, not a drop spilled. Who will you be? He shouted from the half-open window. I took a deep breath, not knowing how to answer. Good, fear said, as if uncertainty were a gift. And who, fear said, as the bus peeled away, who are you now? Who are you really? Doesn't that just say it all? Isn't that great? So in that poem, we have the Four Noble Truths. We have got impermanence. We have got reactivity, suffering. We have one thing leads to the next, interconnection. And then we have this quality of wisdom that says, who will I be? So let's just take that apart for a second. There I was making tea in my kitchen when fear hit me like a school bus. Isn't that a great line? There I was making tea in my kitchen when fear hit me like a school bus. Have you ever felt that way? Like out of nowhere, bam, I was doing just fine. And all of a sudden, some thought comes, some emotion comes, something happens that becomes really uncomfortable. And oftentimes, you know, we push it away. Maybe something happens and we get really angry. Or lots of anxiety. Something happens, and often beneath those difficult emotions or mind states, there is fear. And that's why it's painful. At the bottom of fear is often pain. And then she goes on to say, I'm scared, I said. And yeah, fear said, because I'm scary. That's also a great line. That's the truth, right? That's the reality. Life is difficult for everybody. Well, what if I lose everything? I said to Fear. Yeah, said Fear, what if you do? Well, we actually know that's going to happen, right? This is part of the truth of our lives, that ultimately we will be separated from everything we hold dear, and that's painful. And that's this part of the second noble truth where we hold on to what we want, how things should be. And then we get the rope burn. We get the, it's painful when it does change. And then, and who will I be when everything changes? Yes, said Fear, who will you be? Can we even know? Is our identity even tied to who we are based on the conditions or the constructs that we set up? I took a deep breath, not knowing how to answer. Good, Fear said, as if uncertainty were a gift. So this is this piece of not self, interconnection. Everything happens because everything else happens, and we don't know. We don't know. We are asked over and over again in our practice to come with beginner's mind, right? To, as the Zen masters say, always keep don't know mind. Always keep don't know mind. Who will I be when everything changes? I didn't know how to answer because I don't know. So this poem points precisely to how we manage our discomfort. The truth that difficulty happens, the first noble truth. Life includes this difficulty. The second noble truth, there's a cause of this suffering, of this gripping, that we tend to make things worse, right? And we don't have to. That's the third noble truth. That's so brilliant. The transition from the second noble truth, we tend to make things worse, and the third noble truth, peace is possible. We can, the mind can subside. We don't have to hold on. We can actually say, okay, Fear, I'm going to feel you. And right in that moment, there's an opening that happens. It doesn't mean the fear goes away, but we're actually turning towards the discomfort and saying, yeah, this is what's happening. And then the wisdom part of it, in my view, the fourth noble truth, there is a path to the end of suffering. All of our practices, the Eightfold Path, which includes, I think, all of our practices. But one of the primary things that I think when we are practicing with discomfort is to really understand in a tangible way that struggle really is extra. It's an extra layer. That how would we don't want to make a difficult thing more difficult. This is true. We don't, but we tend to because of fear, because of anger, because of all the ways discomfort shows up. So I want to briefly give you an overview of a really good way to work with right in the moment when the discomfort arises. And I know many of you know this practice, and I just want to offer it again. And this is a practice of rain. How many people, show of hands, are familiar with rain? Okay, so a fair number, and there are a bunch of people here who don't have their video on, so I actually don't know what's happening for you. So if you can turn your video on, that would be great. I'm going to pause for a moment. It looks like Rich has a question. Hi, Rich. Good morning.
Good morning. No, I was just trying to raise my hand to say.
Got it. All right. Okay, good. Thank you so much. All right. So this is a practice that was developed in the 70s from Michelle McDonald, which is a very beautiful practice that brings us right into the moment of whatever is happening and gives us a very clear way to work with our minds and our hearts. And RAIN is an acronym that stands for recognize, allow, inquire, and non-identify or nurture. And Tara Brach has shifted it some to a way that really weaves some compassion into it that I really love. So something comes up, we get scared. Ah, we can recognize it, fear, okay. And if we're willing to recognize it, we can name it. It might be that the fear arises, but we really don't want to deal with it and we push it away. And then she's created a new acronym for the opposite of RAIN, which is DROP. So this is kind of fun, the RAIN DROP. And the D stands for distraction, maybe even denial is what's happened. Like, I'm not looking at that. The A, okay, here's the fear. Can I allow it to be there? When Michelle first developed this practice, she called it acceptance. And we can use the word acceptance, but I want you to know that it's not a moral judgment about acceptance or not. And sometimes that word can be tricky. So I like to think of it as an allowing. So when we recognize, and then that's that recognition, we're coming into being right here. We're coming back over and over again. We're saying, yes, this is fear. Then the distraction, the denial, pushing it away. And I want to say, sometimes the distraction is helpful. Sometimes we need to know, I actually can't deal with that right now. And that's a conscious choice to say, I will address that later when I have more bandwidth. And that's having a lot of internal awareness to know what you can deal with when. And then we get to the accepting and the allowing. And the way I experience that is to relax and receive the experience. And we can do that in meditation, and we will do this in our meditation. Can I be with my breath and body right now, just as it is? Or is there resistance? That's the R of the drop. Distraction and then resistance. There might be resistance, and there also might be some allowing at the same time. This can go both ways. And then the I, inquiry, or take an interest in it. Recognizing the fear, yes, I can let it be there. Ah, where do I feel it in my body? Oh, my heart is really beating. Oh, I'm sweating. My head is pounding. That's one way to take some interest in it. We can take an inquiry, which is, what do I believe about this situation? Is this a projection or is it accurate? The opposite of the inquiry, the O in drop, is what Michelle says is obliviousness. Like, we're just numbed out. I don't even want to know. Or I'm oblivious to whatever the situation is. You know, sometimes being oblivious is nice. You know, I'm just like, I'm not dealing with it. I don't know. I'm going to go bake a cake or whatever. I'm not dealing with it. It's not so skillful, but that is the opposite of being willing to take a look at it, the inquiry, the interest. And then the fourth, the non-identification or the not self. That is taking us into that piece of interconnection, that everything happens because other things happen. This is the piece of karma, that there is a consequence to every action, so we don't have to take things personally. So this part of the RAIN is not taking it personally. But here is where Tara Brach has brought in this beautiful practice of saying, how can I nurture myself right in this moment? What do I need? What a beautiful question, right? To turn this, okay, fear is here. How can I deeply care for myself? What would be the next nurturing action? And the opposite of that, the P for drop, is when we personally identify, or personification. When we think, it's all about me. It's, you know, why is this happening to me? That's the opposite of the interconnection, the not self. We might say, why is this happening to me? That might feel very personal. And then we work to get a bigger perspective. Because sometimes things do feel that way. And so drop is not necessarily negative. Drop has its uses. So what happens in the nurturing and the non-identification is we can experience a quality of equanimity. And that widens out the view. It lets us not have to fix anything. And this is part of what we do with the experience of discomfort from the perspective of this practice. And I'm not talking about emergency discomfort. I just want to make that clear. Sometimes we really do have to address something that comes up right now, but lots of times we don't necessarily have to do that. So this nurturing, this non-identification lets us hold a wider view. Rumi says, "Moonlight floods the whole sky from horizon to horizon. How much it can fill your room depends on its windows." Moonlight floods the whole sky from horizon to horizon. How much it can fill your room depends on its windows. So this practice of rain and drop is a continual opening and closing of the windows, right? The windows, how much light can come in, or when do we have a migraine and you need to close the drapes and say later? And I mean that quite sincerely. We really have to titrate and be attentive to our bandwidth. So this is a way of working with discomfort, the practice of rain. So we'll sit and move into our meditation now, and I will offer a bit of a guided practice in a little bit, not right away. We'll get quiet first. And the invitation is, in the meditation, if you don't feel like doing this practice, do your own practice, tune me out. It's fine, you can do that. But if you want to, give it a try and see how it goes. Any questions? Okay, so let's move into our meditation, and we'll sit for about 25 minutes. So once again, finding a posture in which you are comfortable, which you can be attentive yet relaxed. As Jack Kornfield says, please take your seat right here between heaven and earth, with the quality of this uprightness, which is attentiveness, wakefulness, but also a quality of relaxing. If you're noticing any holding, constriction in the body right now, see if you can bring a comforting breath or some comforting energy to that space so it can soften and relax any amount. Not forcing a letting go, but a quality of letting be. Settling into that place where you can let your attention rest, be it the breath, the body, or even a metta practice, or a practice that might be something else. And hold your awareness there, coming back when the mind wanders and beginning again. Always trying to bring a quality of kindness and warmth, curiosity, with a gentle persistence. And we'll sit quiet. Noticing now if there are any predominant thought streams or heart energies that are predominant, that you're really noticing, that maybe are getting in the way of settling, or they're not in the way, but they're present. So can you recognize what's really happening here? What is present? Any kind of quality of discomfort, pushing away. And if there isn't, you can even work with the qualities of comfort. Rain is not only for difficulties, it's for developing deeper awareness of how whatever is present in the mind or the heart reverberates in the body and conditions our thoughts further and influences our actions. So recognizing, this recognition cuts through any autopilot. What's really happening here? Asking us to remember to be here, to recollect the attention, just noticing. And see if you can allow that to be there. By relaxing and receiving the experience, sensing the breath and the body. There may be some distraction, there may be some resistance, noticing if that is true too. As we recognize and allow, you might even use the phrase, right now, this is what's happening. Right now, it's like this. There might be a sound or a smell or a sensation, something coming in through the senses that is influencing what is present. And can you inquire a little bit? What is this like? Take some interest in it. What is the reverberation in the body? Or are there thoughts that are generated or heart states that come about? Not for analysis, but just bringing a quality of curiosity and inquiry into whatever it is that is here. Are you a bit oblivious? That's okay too, just noticing that. And now whatever is happening, can you experience it as part of a wider view? Not identifying, not taking it personally, knowing it's just what's here as a result of many other causes that creates the conditions for whatever has arisen to arise. Letting that be. Asking yourself, what do I need? Is there some nurturing that I could give myself? And in this space of recognizing and allowing, having a little interest and care, this nurturing care, not needing to fix anything. Is there a sense of spaciousness, equanimity that might arise? And you can go through these steps, if you'd like to continue in your own quiet space. Just noticing the reverberation of the practice of rain, noticing the distraction, the resistance, what we can look at, what we can't look at, and holding yourself kindly. And we'll continue to sit quietly. And then coming back into an awareness of being in your body, in the breath, noticing any amount of stillness, quiet, ease, and comfort that has come about. Letting that spread through your whole body. And maybe even taking it all the way out to how you perceive the edges of your body. And let it go beyond the edges. So there's a sense of internal and external ease and comfort. And you're breathing, a breathing body, heart and mind, right in the middle of that. May we hold everybody as kin. Everybody's joys, everybody's sorrows, and knowing the truth of discomfort, and that we can bring this loving awareness and healing energy to one another. And that includes ourselves, to be held in there. So, befriending discomfort everywhere, self, each other, and beyond. I think this is our practice. It really is. We are befriending discomfort everywhere, in ourselves, in one another, in the world. And there's comfort and there's joy. So please don't hear that I'm not offering these thoughts just as there is only discomfort, because there is much more than discomfort. So let's first, talk about discomfort in the self. Have you heard the expression, pain is inevitable, suffering is an option? So, you know, when I first heard that, I thought, I don't think I believe that. I wonder if that's actually true. And here's the thing, you know, there are so many teachings that we hear through the Dharma or through other wisdom traditions or wherever we find meaningful teachings that sound really good. And we go, yeah, that's right. That's right. But can we dig into them a little deeper and see how they work? And I think that this is the beauty of our practice, is that we are asked to see how it really works. From our direct experience, what works and what doesn't work. And what I mean by work is what supports our well-being and decreases our suffering with deeper and deeper understandings. So a number of years ago, I was teaching a class for a mindfulness class for UCLA. And when I teach for UCLA, it's a prescribed curriculum, the mindfulness curriculum itself. And it was the week where we were talking about mindfulness of the mind. And in the curriculum, it asked that I use that phrase, pain is inevitable, but suffering is optional. And I called up Diana Winston, one of our Spirit Rock teachers, and she's the director of this program at UCLA and my mentor, one of my mentors. And I said, Diana, I can't teach that. I can't teach pain is inevitable and suffering is optional, because I don't think it is. And I was really chewing with her on, is suffering to pain as grief is to loss? Do they go hand in hand? Does one lead to the next? And so we started talking about it more, and I said, I just cannot teach that as a rote teaching if I don't believe it, if it's not my experience. And she said, well, you know, let's think about it a little bit more. And we started digging into some of these teachings and the difference between reactivity and responsiveness. And she said, look, you don't have to teach that directly. You know, use your creativity, but think it through. When does difficulty and discomfort and pain become worse? What are the things that you, Heidi, may do to make it worse, to turning it into suffering? And using the definition of suffering as the imperative in the mind that things be different than they are. When we insist, no, I want it like this, not like that. So she said, you know, keep working with that. And she said, I know it's hard, but I think it's true. I think it's true that suffering is optional. And maybe that is what the Buddha taught, is that challenge and stress and difficulty are all true. But what we do with them, this is the practice. This is what is optional. And so it took me into a deeper study and practice of how the Four Noble Truths really work inside of me. And that really critical space between the first truth, that life is difficult for everybody, and the second one, that there's a cause of the difficulty, which is our relationship to the difficulty, that we do tend to make this work. And then the brilliance of the shift from the second noble truth of there's a cause to there is an end of suffering. Not forever, in this moment. So that's how I relate to this, is that I don't really think that, I mean, I'm hoping that over time, my mind is less reactive, so I have less suffering, but I'm still going to suffer. I'm still going to make a difficult situation more difficult, I think, from time to time, when I'm scared, when I'm frightened, when I'm exhausted and I can't think straight, because we're human. But that peace is possible when the mind subsides and opens up, that's when the suffering is optional. That's when this adage became true for me. I said, okay, now I can teach that. Now I can talk about it because I understood it a little bit more deeply. But it was a really wonderful exchange between myself and one of my teachers to come into what the Buddha said, find out from your direct experience. Don't just do something out of rote. Don't just do something without saying, why am I doing it? Understand it more deeply. And the practice of rain helps manage those mind states. And then bringing in metta, may I be peaceful and happy, may I be safe and protected. We all know these things. That helps ease the suffering when it's present. And mudita is such a gorgeous practice. We've talked about it in here, appreciative joy, to really take heart and feel the happiness of somebody else's happiness just for the sake of getting a hit of vicarious joy. I mean, why not, right? Because that too helps the suffering release. And then we rely on faith, just like we talked about the last couple of weeks, this confidence, this trust in practice and our ability to be in this practice, to cultivate this clarity of mind and the kind heart. And really critically important, mindfulness, this practice, developing mindfulness, becoming more mindful, it doesn't mean that difficulty isn't going to happen, right? It doesn't mean that, but it changes our relationship to it. And that's critically important, that it's actually workable. We can work with difficulty. So I want to bring in Rumi again, The Guest House, this very, very famous poem, because it points to this so perfectly. This being human is a guest house. Every morning, a new arrival, a joy, a depression, a meanness. Some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all. Even if they are a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture, still treat each guest honorably. This guest may be clearing you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice, meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful for whatever comes, because each has been sent as a guide from beyond. I think what I love about this poem so much is that it names that everything happens to everybody. We don't know who's going to show up, what emotional energy, the joy, the depression, the meanness, the beauty, the kindness, and the invitation to meet each one as a guest. Now, what would that be like, right? If our heart and our mind could have that quality that whatever comes into it, we can welcome, even the unwelcome. Can we welcome the unwelcome? This is here. This is what's here. That's really important. That's how we work to widen out a perspective. And this is a way we can work with this discomfort in ourselves to see, yes, this is what's here right now. Terry Tempest Williams says, "The courage to continue before the face of despair is the recognition that in those eyes of darkness, we find our night vision." Isn't that beautiful? The courage to continue before the face of despair is the recognition that in those eyes of darkness, we find our night vision. I think that's true. We find our way somehow, and our practice supports us in doing that. So, discomfort. How do we befriend discomfort in each other, someone else? A couple of stories for you. A number of years ago, I was coming out of the grocery store in my town in Arcata, and there was a person who was sitting close to the front door on the ground. A man, looked to be a middle-aged man, who was unkempt. He looked disheveled to me, like a disheveled person, and he was agitated and anxious and asking everybody who came out of the store for something to eat. Everybody. And he was, you couldn't miss him. You couldn't miss him. He was there and he was making contact with every single person. And myself included, we all walked by. Because it was a little bit combative. It wasn't combative, but it was intense. It was very, like, I'm in your face, I need something to eat. But he was sitting on the ground. He wasn't standing up. And I noticed my own fear response, my own avoidance response. And, there are times where it's easy to offer something to somebody on the street, and there are times where it's not, for probably myriad reasons. But I wasn't the only one who just walked past him. And I noticed as I was walking across the parking lot to my car that the store manager had come out and he was standing over this person who was sitting on the ground, and he was yelling at him, actually, that he had to leave. You have to get up. You gotta leave. You gotta leave. And the person sitting on the ground was saying, "Look, man, I'm just hungry. I'm just hungry. I need something to eat." And the store manager kept repeating, "You gotta leave, you gotta leave." And finally, the man on the ground looked up at this store manager and said, "Man, what would you do if you were in my shoes?" And it was such a great conversation stopper and such an important question. And the store manager started stammering, saying, "What would I do? What would I do? What would I do if I was hungry?" And then there was commotion, not between the two of them. I think some cars drove in between me and where they were. And I don't know the outcome of it, but when I looked back, he had left. The person sitting down had left. And this was years ago that this happened. And I haven't forgotten this experience because I was very moved by the man sitting on the ground having the presence of mind to say, "Well, what would you do?" Because when we turn it around, it gives us a different perspective. And at the time, I had my business in town, which many of you know was a big, busy neighborhood laundromat. And I was, and we had so many people coming into the laundromat, many people who were living in and out of homelessness. Sometimes we would find people sleeping in our landscaping, or once we found somebody who had found a corner inside the store. And it was a perpetual question about what is the right thing to do? How can I manage my own discomfort with people who are living in tremendous amounts of discomfort? And my hope was that if I had that situation in the store where somebody said, well, what would you do? That I would have given him something to eat and said, yeah, you know, I don't know what I would do. And I see you're hungry. Here's some food. That would be my best self showing up. And when I had that store, we did do a number of things to help support people who needed it and that we could. But that was this experience of how are we in relationship to each other? How do we sit with other people's discomfort, which then transfers to our own discomfort? Another story that also happened in the similar time frame. My husband and I like to do a lot of hiking, camping, getting out into the wilderness. And we were down at Oregon Pipe National Monument, which is on the Arizona-Mexican border. It's very remote and it's very desolate. And it's the one place in the country where the Oregon Pipe cactus grows. And they are similar in size to big saguaro cactus, but they look like a candelabra. They have this great trunk and then all of these different pipes, like a pipe organ, grow out of it. It's very beautiful. And as we were driving down to where we were going to camp, from probably, it seemed like maybe even 100 miles away, and this may be incorrect, but we started encountering Border Patrol checkpoints the closer we got to the border. And my nice protected life of living in rural Northern California, I hadn't encountered Border Patrol checkpoints in my travels in this country. So we were made aware of, oh yeah, we're getting to the Mexican border. Now this was 2015, and so this was before Trump was elected, and there was all this going on with building a wall. And to my knowledge, some of the wall has been built in this tender ecosystem of this where these Oregon pipe cactus grow. But anyway, we got in there and we found our where we were camping. We got set up and we went to the visitor center so we could learn more about the hiking trails that were there and just a little bit more about the park. And the ranger who we were talking with, before we went in there, we noticed in different parts of the park there were these signs that said, if you see anything suspicious, any suspicious person, call 911. Now, we have been in national monuments and parks all over the place, and I have never seen so many postings that said, if you see anything suspicious, call 911. So when we went to the visitor center, and I asked the ranger, what's with all of these signs? Is this a safe place? And she said, oh, there are eyes everywhere in this park. This is the safest park. I said, then what do you mean? What are the signs about? And I'm still not getting it. And she said, well, at any given time, there are probably at least 300 illegals coming across the border through the park, undocumented human beings, people. And then we started understanding what was going on there. And it was startling and it was upsetting because I hadn't been that close into that, the reality of what it means for somebody to make their way across the desert to try to get to somewhere safe. So we camped that night and we went out for a beautiful hike, and the place was really, really beautiful. Just the desolate nature of the desert, but it's so full of life. So the next morning, it was really early, and I was walking around with my tea, and a border patrol was driving through this area where we were camping. And so I stopped him to just ask some more questions, to say good morning, you know, tell me more about this park. And I looked into the cab of his pickup truck, and it was full of all kinds of electronic communication equipment and lots of guns. And I don't know anything about that. It's so outside of my experience to be around guns. I don't know anything. So we just started talking, and it turned into a really nice guy. He did backcountry patrolling for 10 years on horseback in Yosemite and had this new assignment of being at Oregon Pipe. And so I asked him, I said, so what is it with what's really happening in this park? I've never been to a park where there's border patrol who's armed in the way that you are. What's going on? And he said, again, that there were probably about 300 people traveling through the park at any given time. And if we see somebody with either a black water bottle or anybody who asks for food and water, don't give it to them and call 911. And he left, and my husband and I just looked at each other. And we had this conversation about what will we do if we're out hiking and we encounter somebody who clearly is traveling, truly trying to get into this country, what would we do? And it was so easy to say, we'd give them food and water. That's what we would do. If we felt threatened in some way, just like we would in anywhere else, we might call 911. But we were curious about why we had such good cell service in this park. We never have cell service in remote areas, but this park was wired with cell service. And then we started wondering, were there cameras inside these big arms of the cactuses? And wouldn't surprise me. So here we were dealing with this incredible discomfort that didn't make any sense to our experience in such a gorgeous, special, remote place. A biodiversity, a kind of important environment. So again, you know, what do we do when we are faced with the real suffering of another, the discomfort in ourselves? And so we come to compassion practice, right? To have compassion for ourselves. How do we behave with compassion towards somebody else? And when my vulnerability can meet the vulnerability of the man who's asking for food, then an instinctive kindness, I think, arises. That's what comes out of this. When we can really be up close and sense into our discomfort and know the other is also sensing that, what comes out of that, I think, is so real. We know how to act when that happens. This is a piece from Zenju Earthland Manuel, who's a Zen priest, from her new book called The Deepest Peace, Contemplations from a Season of Stillness. It's my favorite book this winter. It's really, really a beautiful book. I highly recommend it. The Deepest Peace, Contemplations from a Season of Stillness, Zenju Earthland Manuel. This is what she says. We go to great lengths to save all beings from disappointment, from dissatisfaction, from despair. Some promise to suffer as long as there is suffering. Instead, I walk alongside the sufferer. I offer the best dose of liberation I can muster up without a word spoken. I find it best to be singing when engaging suffering, which is to say that in order to engage from the place of freedom, I need to have experienced freedom. If I'm weighed down by my own pain, I can only witness the pain of others and do nothing about it. Without having honed the wisdom from one's own suffering, compassion becomes a shallow place of condolences, apologies, sympathy, sorrow, or worry on behalf of those suffering. Compassion is not to affirm our suffering or love, but to be awakened to the fact that we share this life. Compassion is an experience of life that rises in the midst of our suffering. Compassion is a presence and experience that arises when one feels an acceptance of the vulnerable, suffering human being. Compassion is not a thing to accomplish, wrapped as a present, given as a gift, or practiced. It can only boil up in the deepest pain until it spills into the laps of those who surround you. This is the experience of peace in a circle of humanity that lives together rather than in one group exploiting another. Compassion is when the snow falls heavy and softens the path of rabbits scampering to safety. It's the ocean so vast it brings water to every continent. I love this line that says, I offer the best dose of liberation I can muster up without a word spoken. I find it best to be singing when engaging suffering, which is to say that in order to engage from the place of freedom, I need to have experienced freedom. We need our practice. This is what's happening in our practice. This is a practice of being liberated from the habitual, continual causes of suffering. And so every time you experience a release of the mind, when you understand something a little more deeply and you know it in your bones and it changes you, this is liberation. And so when you know it's possible inside of you, you can show up and offer that. Not in a preachy way. You just show up as yourself. And it gives you the courage and confidence to actually meet the suffering of somebody else because you understand suffering. And so when my suffering meets yours, the vulnerabilities meet, and then a love gets created. We see each other and we don't harm each other. That's what comes out of this. We don't harm ourselves and we don't harm each other. So this is how I experience befriending discomfort in others. I want to leave time for us to talk with each other. So befriending, how do we befriend this discomfort beyond self and other? And this goes back to keeping the wider perspective. You know, we can see the discomfort in the world around us. It's everywhere. You don't have to look too far. But it might not be about me personally or a specific person, but it's the environment. It's the earth herself. It's everything. So we do need to keep this wide perspective. We need to cultivate equanimity that says, right now it's like this. That my happiness and unhappiness depend on what I do. That we each have different paths. We care about each other. We keep a beginner's mind. Remembering Suzuki Roshi saying, in the beginner's mind, there are many possibilities. In the experts, there are few. Right? Keep an open mind. Ask yourself when you get caught in a question or a struggle of discomfort with the world, what else is true? What else is true? Can I find some beauty right here, close to me, just outside? To understand the truth of impermanence, the truth of interconnection. And this is the development of wisdom. We start to really trust what Ajahn Chah said. Ajahn Chah was the teacher of Jack Kornfield, the one who knows, the one who knows. And the one who knows is inside of us. And I'll end with this beautiful piece that's credited to as an old Inuit song. I think over again, my small adventures, my fears, those small ones that seemed so big, all those vital things I had to get and to reach. And yet there is only one great thing, to live and see the great day that dawns and the light that fills the world. Let's just take a minute to go inside. Let this settle.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.